This is Environmental Voices Rising, Women at the Mic, where you can step into the world of environmental advocacy and innovation. I'm your host, Michael Crawford Zimmering, and I'm inviting you to join us. In each episode of our podcast, we amplify the voices of environmental leadership from a distinct perspective. From grassroots organizing, groundbreaking research, to bold activism in courts and industry, each episode celebrates the diverse voices of fearless and creative women who are shaping a sustainable future. These women believe in the future where innovative solutions and an unwavering commitment to social justice and a healthy planet is available to all. We invite you to join us. Listen to today's episode and be inspired. Joining me today on Environmental Voices Rising, Women at the Mic, is Courtney Opshog, founder and CEO of Blue Ocean Gear, a truly innovative company whose tracking technology is steering the fishing industry towards a more sustainable future. We'll take a deep dive into the world of ocean conservation, exploring the impact of ghost gear on ocean plastic pollution, and how Blue Ocean Gear's cutting-edge technology of GPS tracking, a version of Find My Phone, for fishing gear is not just solving the problems, but creating a sustainable future for the oceans. As Sylvia Earle reminds us, the ocean is our life support. So let's explore how we can protect it together. Courtney, welcome to Environmental Voices Rising, Women at the Mic.
Michael, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Wonderful. I'd like to start with the mystery of ghost gear. What is it? Why is it such a significant yet unnoticed problem for ocean plastic pollution?
When we look out over the ocean, it's, you know, we see the waves, we see the ocean surface, we might see some things floating out there, but we don't see what's happening beneath the waves. And every year, when fishermen are setting their nets, their traps, their lines, they set their gear and they harvest it periodically, and then they haul it in at the end of the season. But it means that gear is left out on the water unattended for a great deal of time. And the ocean, as you know, is a very volatile place. It's a very challenging environment. So there's tides and currents and storms of much greater strength than oftentimes we ever even see on land. And so that gear can move. It can get dragged underwater. It can get caught on things. It can get dragged by another vessel or entangled by a marine mammal. It becomes lost, which creates something called ghost gear. So everything, that gear that's lost continues to fish without ever being harvested. Everything that's captured dies and becomes bait for more fish to become captured. And this is the cycle known as ghost fishing that can really deplete our fishery stocks. It can have a very negative impact on our marine ecosystems. And I think the point that you were alluding to is the significance of the problem or the magnitude. This is something that I think a lot of folks don't realize or appreciate. Fishermen can lose between 10 to 30% of their gear every season. In some places where there's high hurricane activity, it can be up to 80% of their gear.
Wow.
And that's to the tune of about 640,000 metric tons of gear lost in our oceans every year. It's the single largest source of ocean plastics. There was just a recent study done by the ocean cleanup folks out at the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, and over 75% of the Great Pacific Garbage Patch is from fishing-related sources.
I've read and I've heard many accounts of entanglements from ghost gear that trap the animals. And in fact, that I read from the Ghost Gear Project out of Harvard that more than 650,000 marine mammals were either killed or maimed last year. So that's so tragic in itself. But what I didn't realize was how much the plastic pollution was a percentage of this lost fishing gear. So here we are.
And that just gets broken down into microplastics. We see that entering our food source from the sea. And yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of studies that are done on marine mammal entanglements, which are a very significant problem, particularly on the east coast of the United States and Canada. But again, a lot of it too is also just about the smaller species, the fish. and crustaceans that are captured too. In Norway, they just published a big article. The fisheries department pulled up just two nets and it had 700 kilos of dead fish. It can't be eaten, it's rotted, but that's part of the ecosystem that has another impact on larger species such as marine mammals as well.
You are an aerospace engineer by training, and you did research on underwater robotics. But how did you come upon this problem and decide to do something about it?
I was engaged in the National Marine Sanctuaries Advisory Council. That's where I first started listening to the thoughts of commercial fishermen and recreational fishermen and some of the issues they were facing, as well as conservationists on the council, and realized that they were often at odds. And I felt like the fishing industry, it's such an important one. We need to have seafood to feed the world. It's one of many sources of protein, but it's a very important one, especially for a lot of coastal and island-based communities. So how can we do this in a more sustainable manner? And I started looking into how technology that already exists in other fields, but could maybe help with this industry that really has not seen a technological overhaul like many, many other industries already have. It's kind of the equivalent to where farming was maybe 20, 30 years ago. Now we're suddenly seeing more and more technology being focused on the fishing industry. So we originally came up with the idea of a smart trap idea of counting how much was in a trap and transmitting that via a smart buoy to shore so fishermen would know what was in their traps. That kind of converted into just the smart buoy because that was what most folks were interested in. And we started getting asked by fishermen, by regulators, by scientists, hey, can you use that to find lost gear? Can you use that to detect an entanglement? Can you use that to detect gear theft? And so the smart buoy idea was conceived. And so, as we developed that over the years and the company, we incorporated in 2019 and grew from there, that's become our main product because we can do so much with something so small.
That's so incredible. And what's really exciting to me about this whole process is because my background in sustainable design, in the process of meeting a design challenge, you need to work with the people that actually are the end users. You're not just thinking about creating a product that is for consumers, but you actually, there's an engagement and collaboration, which I think was so interesting to me about your process that you continue to do, like you actually were working with the fishermen to ask, what do you need? What's your problem? What do you want to solve? Yeah.
100%. There was a lot of time spent out on fishing vessels. We do still go out when there's particular issues we need to solve or questions we need to ask or things we need to learn and understand. It's so important in any engineering field or any design field, as you mentioned. But I think in fishing in particular, it's something that not a lot of people have exposure to really understand what goes on out on the water and how difficult it is, what a dangerous job it is, and how fast everything moves and how well everything has to work. The ocean is a very difficult environment to design for, but when you're talking about fishing too, they operate at such a high duty cycle and everything is, it looks very highly choreographed. They all know exactly what they're doing and where to be and how not to get hurt. And so they don't have extra time to spend on setting something up or making a piece of equipment that isn't quite functioning right. It has to work every single time. It has to be rugged. It has to get dropped on the deck and slammed against the side of the boat. It has to withstand a hurricane. So these are all things that fishermen helped, they weighed in on. They saw the very early prototypes and then they helped with feedback of like, well, it can't have this, it can't have that, it's got to have this and it's got to have this. And that really drove the design requirements. As engineers, we need design requirements, and the fishermen really are what drove that.
No, that's really great. So these buoys, what are the kind of the equipment that the buoys are attached to that the fishermen use?
Any kind of fixed fishing gear. So we work with lobster and crab fishermen that use traps, whether they're single traps or strings of 50 traps all hooked together. We have longline fishermen, gill net fishermen. We work with aquaculture farms, so just a static array of a farm. But again, it's in an area maybe that needs to be tracked or they need data from. We have researchers that have purchased the equipment to put on their survey gear that's very expensive that they want to be able to retrieve. It goes on, it's a very small compact, it's just about 7 inches in diameter, and it goes on as what they call a trailer buoy. So it's never the main gear taking the bulk of the forces, it's just this small side thing that you attach on, like your, you know, the equivalent of your Apple AirTag device. And so it's just, where is my fishing gear? Or where is my gear that I put out on the water?
It's a very small, it's a yellow. I encourage everybody to go on your website and look at them because they're actually really cute. They're these yellow, they're yellow with your blue logo on it. So what's in them? It's transmitting up through satellite data, right? And then the fishermen are able to pick it up on their boats, on their computers and phones. Is that how it's working?
I look at it as two parts. There's the sensors and the transmitter. And so the sensors are everything that we want to know about the ocean, that the fishermen need to know. It's a lot of the buoy motion sensors and positioning. And then we also do have some ocean condition sensors like temperature and wave height. And all of this gets transmitted either via radio or satellite. And that gets to our cloud database. And then the fishermen have a number of different ways that they can interact with the data, whether it's getting a text alert if something anomalous has happened and they might need to go check it out. We can interface with their onboard GPS chart plotters in the wheelhouse of their boat so that they just keep fishing the way they always have. They just, in addition to their boat, now they have all their gear displayed. We do also have a mobile app and web interface. We also do have some scientists or regulator customers that want to look at data a little bit more. And so there's kind of a wide variety depending on whatever the user needs or wants.
Yeah, it sounded like people got really excited. I mean, I know from your website also that you have a lot of happy customers. So could you tell us about one experience like one of the, you know, or a couple of those fishermen had?
You know, one of my favorites was we launched on the market right at the beginning of COVID, 2021. So I guess sort of in the middle of it. We couldn't be out with customers as much or out on boats. So we had to really transition to doing things remotely, which can be difficult when you're trying to build up that trust in the relationship. I remember being on a call with a fisher out in Alaska who is in port, and he was saying that he was a pretty low tech and he wasn't sure, you know, if he was going to be able to do this or find it useful. And after about like 10 minutes of going through the training, and I said, just pop it in the water and watch it come up on your mobile device. And he did that. And he said, I've been fishing for 40 years, and this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. And it's moments like that, that's the aha for us as well as for the fishers, right? Like it's that, hey, I can throw $100,000 worth of gear off the boat, but now I can know where it is. It's another fisherman has said it's like it's the feel good. It's a sense of comfort knowing that they or trust that they know where all of their gear is. It's a like the low jack, I guess, of her fishing gear. So, yeah, we do have some happy users, I guess.
Great. No, because I can imagine because I had no idea how much that must a huge expense economically for a fisherman to think about losing their gear, being able, there's this other weird side to it, which is like they get to save money as well.
Well, that's the whole important thing, right? Because I think you have to find that sweet spot of something that's good for the environment also has to be something that saves money. And beyond just the cost of not having to replace their gear that otherwise would have been lost, the big one for the fishers is actually the fuel use. They can spend 6 or 7 or even 8 hours a day just looking for gear out on the water. There you've got, again, it's the challenging conditions, but now you add in fog or say you wanted to be fishing at night or say suddenly some big swells have come in. Being able to see where their gear is, they can go directly there and it saves them a lot of fuel. And the fuel costs being what they are right now, that's a very significant savings that they feel every day. Whereas preventing lost gear is kind of more of a seasonal thing, but every day they're noticing that they're saving time and money.
What other parts of the world are you getting your gear into the hands of fishermen?
You know, we started mainly in North America, and part of that, again, was COVID sticking a little closer to home, but also some of the most significant fisheries that were at risk of being shut down due to some of the issues we were working on, like lost gear and whale entanglements in gear, were in New England of the United States and North Atlantic Canada. So we've done a great deal of work there and have a lot of fishers using the smart buoys in the lobster and snow crab fisheries there. And then we also just launched in Australia and New Zealand, and what's interesting is the conditions for fishing around, especially on the western coast of Australia, are very similar to that of the Bering Sea, which is really rough waters, very volatile conditions. And so again, they're seeing that prevention of gear loss and the fuel savings right away. So those are some of the newer markets that we're heading into.
That's great. So on the other side, on the kind of ripple effect of what recovering lost gear is, what about entanglements? You mentioned, like, so are they able to, is that help like rescuers?
To give a little background, the whales, there are two main ways right now that human interaction with whales are impacting their survival. And one is ship strikes and one is entanglement in fishing gear. They get tangled in the line between traps at the seafloor and the buoy at the surface. So there's, you know, a great deal of work going on to try and prevent that from happening. We actually come at this from a few different ways. One is by preventing ghost gear. You ensure that fishers are getting their gear off the water at the end of the season. A lot of whales get tangled in ghost gear that's unattended because nobody's going out to haul it. So it's just there all the time, whether whales are transiting through. So I think by preventing ghost gear, you can prevent any off-season entanglement risks. We also have sensors on the buoys that can detect and locate an entanglement event. And we've done some simulations with fishermen towing the buoys, simulating what whale behavior would look like. We've worked with marine mammal scientists to understand what that behavior is. And so what that can do is help get a rescue team out there more quickly. Some numbers to that: in the 2015-2016 season on the West Coast of the United States, we had 61 entanglements. And of those 61 that were seen, 55 were never seen again. So if you can't keep track of that animal, you won't be able to help them. Now, some whales they can disentangle themselves, which is a happy circumstance, but sometimes they don't. And so being able to get these very specially trained rescue teams out there, they know exactly what to do. They spend a great deal of time studying how and what to cut free so that the whale can rid itself of the gear. Having a smart buoy on the gear can let them track that animal over time and get to where they need to be. And then the third thing that we do is we work with something called ropeless or on-demand gear, which is where they spool up the buoy onto the trap, and then it's released either by a timer or an acoustic pinger and comes to the surface. And so the smart buoys are part of the required gear configuration when there are season closures in the lobster fishery in New England, so that when that gear surfaces, they know immediately when and where it is. Sometimes it can be a little bit more difficult to know if and when that's happened. We've had some really wonderful partnerships with a lot of the companies and gear innovators that are working on those devices.
That's wonderful. And I think you kind of almost answered it a few times by kind of expanding, like you work with lobster fishermen and fish farms, and like what other marine or fishing industries are you experimenting with?
I think I mentioned that longline fishermen and gill netters as well, but we are looking at working with other ocean industries as well as we get more and more data from the buoys that can inform other ocean industries. One wonderful project we have right now is with the National Weather Service in Alaska. This was actually a project that we were approached by the fishers to do. They need better sea ice and freezing spray predictions in that region. And there are not very few NOAA buoys that are out there to giving the National Weather Service and what they call their ice desk any data in the Northern Bering Sea. So being able to get it from fishing gear where these vessels are is a safety issue for them, right? If freezing spray builds, if too much ice builds up on the deck of the boat can actually capsize. And so if sea ice comes in when they didn't expect it, it can slice off all of their gear back in port. So they could lose everything. So it's a really great project where the fishers have agreed to share their data with the forecasters. The forecasters have agreed to only use the data for their models. And yeah, we'll see how this winter season goes with that information being used.
I'm wondering, do you have any impact data on how much ghost gear you've been able to retrieve? And what are your numbers for CO2 reduction?
So in 2022, we estimated that we prevented about 17 tons of fishing gear from becoming ocean plastic waste. And in 2023, we estimate it was 45 metric tons. And for CO2 reduction or greenhouse gas reduction, in 2022, we estimated it was about 374 metric tons of CO2 reduction. And in 2023, it went up to 599 tons of CO2 reduction from use of smart buoys in fisheries around the world.
Those are exciting numbers, and I'm sure they're going to increase. Courtney, I've learned so much more about ghost gear and what it's like to be a fisher person. Reflecting on the mission that you have on your website, in which I will remind our listeners they can find at blueoceangear.com, and we'll have a link to it in the show notes. Anyway, your mission revolves around creating this bridge or establishing a connection between the fishing industry and ocean conservation, which I think you are succeeding at by mitigating the ocean plastic originating from fishing gear and enabling fishermen to recover their lines more efficiently, save time, money, and energy, and all the things that kind of stress fishermen out. And the ripple effect of cleaner ocean ecosystems. Is there anything else you would like to say about your mission? Like, what's really important to you about it?
You know, I think that's exactly right. I mean, and it's something that has been true since day one. It's still true now. And I think it is something about working in partnership with fishers and the industry, as well as regulators and scientists, and taking this really holistic approach of, hey, the ocean belongs to all of us. We want to be able to have industries that use the ocean responsibly because we all benefit from it. And so it's a matter of finding the partners to work together on that and then really seeing where the differences can be made. We've also have just this amazing team of people together at Blue Ocean Gear, all working towards that same goal. And I think it's really something to have top-notch experts in their field who really care about the ocean and who are up to the challenge of working in this very difficult and challenging environment. It does take both the team as well as all of our partners and customers to really make this happen.
Thank you. I'm also thinking about like the connection to like the consumer, like, because I think more and more the consumer wants transparency. They want to know where the food is coming from. They want to know, is there an effect on the environment, you know, from that? And I think there might be sometimes like a bad rap, or the fishermen people are getting kind of a bad rap about maybe their practices and things. But I think this is like, they don't intentionally lose their equipment, but this really helps them to be part of the solution.
Absolutely. And when it comes to the consumer, there are indicators like Marine Stewardship Council or MSC ratings, which have now, like in the new certification process for qualifying fisheries as being MSC certified, they look at ghost gear prevention or mitigation efforts. They look at endangered species protections. And so these are new, and it was something that we were happy to be part of the dialogue on with the MSC. But that's a way that consumers can know that the seafood that they're purchasing has been fished responsibly. I think in the future, when we look at traceability of where did your fish come from, using technologies like smart buoys as well as vessel tracking can actually, and then working, you know, then that goes all the way up through the seafood supply chain of where did this fish come from? And so there's lots of room to grow there as well.
Oh, that's really great, because I have actually asked sometimes, where did this fish come from?
You have to ask. I think that's it's awkward for some people, I think, but it is our responsibility to ask how something was caught or where it came from. And so there's, I think if people want to feel connected to what they're eating and know that it was caught responsibly and sustainably. And, you know, when we talk about sustainable fisheries, it means that it'll continue for years to come. And I think that hopefully we're helping provide a way for fishers, as you said, to be part of that, to ensure that the fisheries can be there for the next generation of fisheries, that fishing families can continue that tradition, and that our families can continue to enjoy sustainably caught seafood and enjoy healthy oceans.
That's so wonderful. Is there anything else you'd like to say about your company, about the future?
Yeah, like I said, you know, just a huge shout out to the whole team. I think we have some really amazing individuals that are really a part of making this happen. It's just, as an engineer, I think ocean and marine engineering is very similar to aerospace, and it is a full systems approach. You have to have people who are experts at hardware and software and, you know, electrical and mechanical and firmware and the marketing business side of this. And everyone just brings such a really unique perspective. And yet when it all comes together and moves in the same direction, I'm just honored to be part of it.
That's wonderful, like about having a really supportive team that's all on board and everybody's going in the same direction and collaborating together. So needed, so a part of the, what our solution seeking.
I think it's becoming important to a lot of people to work in a field that they know is making a difference. Being able to have a company that is both a business but also good for the environment is something that is very rewarding to work on and work at.
That's a good point. Like finding a company, a person looking for a job wants to work with a team or a company. They know that they're participating in part of the solution, creating something good. I always ask my guests, like, if there's another woman or women who inspire you, who are an inspiration to you.
There are several. I think they're from all over. I think we have some incredible female investors. Daniela Fernandez has been a very longtime supporter. She runs the Sustainable Ocean Alliance and is just very, very outspoken in her support of the oceans. One of our board members, Maureen Stancic-Boyce, has been just a tremendous voice of knowledge for us, both in how to help grow our business in the right way, and then, but also really understands what we do. You know, we also have some amazing females on our team. Ida Pusharazi, who's our cloud operations engineer, Ariana Lowe, who's our project manager, Emily Shallow is our ocean data scientist. So fortunate to have wonderful, wonderful women who I work with. And they're, I think all of them are inspiring.
Oh, great. Thank you so much, Courtney. This has been a wonderful conversation. And I'm really happy that you were able to join me today because I learned so much from you. You expanded my appreciation of the ocean.
I'm glad to hear it. It's a big part of our environment, right? It affects everything. So thank you very much for having me on.
Thank you for joining us, Courtney Opshog, founder of Blue Ocean Gear. As we wrap up another enlightening episode of Environmental Voices Rising, Women at the Mic, we want to express our gratitude to our amazing guests and you, our dedicated listeners. Your support fuels our mission to amplify diverse voices of environmental innovation and provide you with inspirational stories of possibility and change on the path to a more sustainable, equitable future. Remember, it's through collective action and shared vision that we'll create a world that honors both people and planet. Keep exploring, keep advocating, and keep shaping tomorrow. Don't forget to visit our website for additional resources and consider making a donation to support our efforts. Thank you for being a part of the journey, and until next time, keep striving for a better world.